From the Police Show, yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to what is another week and a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course, streaming live on YouTube. 855-212-4227 is the number to jump on in. That's 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Lindsay Rhodes is going to join us. She's an NFL reporter for Sumer Sports, so she will recap the combine. She was out in Indianapolis all of last week. That will be happening an hour from now. Also, last week on my vacation, and it's good to be back, I did a little interview with Michael Chandler, who has a big fight, UFC 314, coming up in about 6 weeks, and he'll be going up against Paddy Pimblett, so we'll play that for you at 4:40 p.m. Eastern Time, 1:40 p.m. Pacific today. And it's good to be back in the studio. We got 5 shows this week after I spent a few days in Florida, where I got a lot of sun, I ate a lot of food, and I also did a lot of walking. So I got in on Wednesday morning, and when I got in on Wednesday, I went for like a 2-mile walk to a bagel place that I like going to down in Florida. It's like a two-mile walk from my grandmother's house. Then I walked back, so I got 4 miles in there. Then I sat my fat ass down at the pool, soaked in the sun, right? Went into the pool, and then on Wednesday night, I went to dinner. I met up with Josh Appel, who used to be the in-stadium announcer for the Miami Marlins, and I also had some dinner with Mark Hochman, who does a great job on Hochman and Crowder on 560 WQAM, so good to have a few drinks, have some good food with those guys. Then Thursday, I got up, I went from Boca to Jupiter, met up with one of my best friends, then we linked up together, drove from Jupiter to Port St. Lucie. And I told Stu like 2 weeks ago, I'm not a big spring training guy. And then my friend said, we're going to spring training. So I said, okay, why not? Now, no Juan Soto in the lineup, no Francisco Lindor. We were 4 rows off the plate, which was awesome. Little small stadium, but cool stadium in Port St. Lucie. I think the last time I was there and they've renovated it, I must have been 12 or 13 years old. So it's been a long, long time since I've been to Port St. Lucie. We're walking into the stadium and Doc Gooden was there. And then I get to my seats, and right, I'm with my best friend, his stepfather, and his stepfather's best friend. And they go, I'm pretty sure that's Jerry Seinfeld sitting 3-4 rows in front of us. So he was in a baseball cap, right? Was kind of slouching down in the seats. So I couldn't really tell if it was Jerry Seinfeld, but I go, yeah, you know, it could be. And then you heard an entire section behind us start chanting as if he was Jerry Springer. Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. And he stood up and he gave a little wave and a little tip of the cap to the fans. And the Mets have a player named Jose Siri. And when Jose Siri was on deck, I said to my buddy, I go, how many insufferable, hey Siri jokes are there going to be? And then the guy in front of us, I kid you not, 30 seconds after I said it, said, hey Siri, who's on deck? And then the whole section, right, gave a laugh because it is a funny line. And my Siri just went off on my phone, which I should have expected that. Probably Stu and Santa Siri's also went off as well. And Jerry Seinfeld was even laughing. And the guy screamed out, yeah, Jerry, you're probably upset you couldn't think of that one. He turned around and he goes, that was good stuff. So that was a little interaction that our section had with Jerry Seinfeld. I probably left in about the seventh inning or so. You know, you're not staying for all these baseball games. After like 3-4 innings, you start to get to these prospects and these no-name players, and it's like, okay, enough is enough. So we drove on back, got back to Jupiter, then finished my drive from Jupiter to Boca. And that Thursday night, I went out for with dinner with some family. You know, my aunt, my uncle live in Florida now, my grandma as well. My mom and dad were down there. So we went out for dinner, had some Italian food, which was good. And then Friday was another big eating day. Huge eating day. I met my agent, Mark Lepselter, for lunch at the Boca Raton Hotel, which has a Seidel's in it. So I had whitefish, I had bacon, I had a hash brown, and I also had a very good sesame bagel, and obviously a ton of coffee. So we dined at Seidel's, which is very, very good. And then I ended up driving to Miami later that night. And by the way, Stu, you know this, Wawa. Now, I know Wawa from Philadelphia. I know they have a Wawa down, a bunch of Wawas down in Florida. So that was awesome. So I stopped on my way down to Miami, and I ended up, I saw Wawa, I got right off the road because they have a bunch of them on 95. And I said, okay, let me go get another coffee because I was having a late dinner. It was an 8 p.m. dinner. And I went to one of my favorite restaurants ever on Friday evening, Joe Stone Crab. And oh boy, me and my buddy, Justin, who I've known since sleepaway camp, we had dinner there. We ate like pigs, absolute pigs. They have a tomato, spinach, and cheese dish. They have a lobster mac and cheese dish. They have coconut shrimp, which is absolutely delicious. We did more hash browns. The hash browns at lunch were enough, so we did hash browns for dinner too. We got a jumbo and a half order of the stone crabs, which are just sensational, and a few other things too. And then for dessert, they have their famous key lime pie, which I love. And he then said to me, and my buddy, his cousin is now, I think he's the COO of the restaurant now. And he said they added a new dessert menu item. And I'm like, okay, we gotta try this dessert menu item. It was a s'mores pie. This thing was delicious. Absolutely delicious. So ended up then driving home after dinner, which I thought I was going to pop on the ride home. And then Saturday, what did I do Saturday? Oh, I went golfing. My other uncle also lives in Florida. So my dad and I, we met up with my dad's friends. And we ended up golfing. We played 18, then got back in the car, then went out for some other dinner Saturday, got up Sunday, and then made my way back to New York. So that was basically the eating, sunshine, pool, Florida vacation, and that's why I was out on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But now we're back for another week of shows. And while I was out, a lot happened to the NFL world. So you have Deebo Samuel getting traded to the Commanders. We'll get into that. T. Higgins literally just 30 minutes ago got tagged by the Cincinnati Bengals. You have LeBron James fighting reporters, and then one of our own reaching out to LeBron James's camp, which we'll get into later on in the program. And oh yeah, by the way, you had the Matthew Stafford stuff get rectified, which anyone listening to this show, I told you from the start, I never thought that Matthew Stafford was going to get traded and Matthew Stafford was going to check in elsewhere and still realize that the Rams were his best destination. But what we do is, I always say, usually when you get into start another week, and whenever we talk football, you're either talking about a quarterback or you're talking about a head coach. And we're going to start today's show with the quarterbacks because coming off the combine, you know, this is not a deep quarterback draft class, but I still expect the two quarterbacks, Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders, to go within the first three picks. And heading into the combine, I thought that Cam Ward was going to go one. I wasn't sure what the Browns were going to do, but I've said, at the worst case scenario, one of the quarterbacks, right, Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, and I've leaned and I said that it's going to be Cam, is going to go one or two. And then at the absolute latest, I thought Shedeur Sanders would go three. Well, after the combine, it would not shock me if the quarterbacks go one, two, right off the board, right out of the gate. Now, I may be in the minority in saying that. I just checked a Ryan Wilson latest mock draft on CBS Sports. And he has Cam Ward going one, Abdul Carter still going two, the Giants then passing up on a quarterback. He has them taking Travis Hunter in at three, Kelvin Banks, the offensive tackle from Texas, going to the Pats at four, Mason Graham going to the Jaguars at five, and he still has, this is post-combine mock draft, Ryan Wilson, do the Shedeur Sanders, huh, going in at number six to the Las Vegas Raiders. But when I was, you know, checking in with the combine and also following the rumors, I do ultimately believe, whether it's the Tennessee or not, that Cam Ward's going to be the number one overall pick. And I think Tennessee has a decision to make. Do you take Cam Ward at number one? And does Mike Borgonzi in year one, right, a few weeks into the job, does he call his shot on who his franchise quarterback is going to be? And he takes his first crack at it. Does he do that with the number one overall pick? Or do you trade back? And I think if you're trading back, the farthest you're going to trade back is to either two or three. Like if Cleveland wants that quarterback, Cam Ward, if that's perceived to be number one quarterback in this draft, which now it is, all right, maybe Cleveland moves up from two to one, Tennessee falls back to one, then they could obviously still get either Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter if they want to pass on a quarterback. Or they could still fall all the way to three, right? Let's say the Giants move up to one, they get Cam Ward, And then maybe Cleveland takes a Shador Sanders at two. But then even if Cleveland takes Abdul Carter, then at three, you could sit there and maybe still get your quarterback in Shador Sanders, or you could go take Travis Hunter. So those are the options, and that's a decision that I think the Tennessee Titans have to make. And I think you could even dumb it down and make it even easier. It's either you take Cam Ward or you take the quarterback at one, or you trade down to two or three, and that's the farthest you're going is three, to get either Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter and then pick up some return in exchange for moving down a few spots. But then I read a report from Connor Hughes, who covers the NFL, the Jets, the Giants, and the entire league for SNY. And Connor Hughes said he talked to a general manager that is not associated with the New York Giants or the Tennessee Titans. And he said if the Giants were to move up from 3-1, it would be a swap of first-round picks. So, right, 1-3 this year, that would be the swap. And then it probably would only cost two additional third-round picks. And he says if there becomes a bidding war where then Cleveland wants to move up, maybe at most the Giants would have to swap the first-round picks this year, right? So the Giants move up to one, Tennessee would fall back to three. And then maybe instead of giving two third-round picks, you'd have to give a second and a third. And when I heard that, and really the genesis of the report was swap ones and then probably only have to give two additional threes, I don't think those results are rich enough where if I'm Tennessee, and hey, if you don't love the quarterback, don't take the quarterback. But if I was Mike Borgonzi and all I'm going to get back is to fall down to three, the Giants move up to one, and probably only two additional third-round picks, I think you just call your shot and you just take the quarterback in Cam Ward at one. So since the combine, here's where I'm at. I really do believe one way or another, whether it's Tennessee or it's Cleveland or it's the Giants, Cam Ward's going to be the first overall pick in the draft. Either Tennessee is going to keep the pick and take him, or they'll fall back a slot or two. Cleveland or the Giants will come up. But still something, and it's funny, because he's the biggest NFL insider that we have. However, with that being said, I feel as if I'm the only one that heard what he said. Now, it wasn't a report, but Adam Schefter last week said it, and I've heard him double down on it since, and it wasn't a report, it was just an opinion. And that's sometimes the tough things with insiders is we look at everything as a report, but sometimes they're just giving an opinion. But their opinions, you know, I don't think Adam Schefter's trying to be a hot take artist. He has informed opinions. So Adam Schefter said it in his podcast. I've also heard him say it again because I watched his entire interview with Barstool Sports with Part of My Take. And he keeps on saying, out of all the uncertainty in this draft, the number one thing that he's most confident in, and this is the way that he said it, the thing he's most confident in is that Cleveland's going to use their first-round pick on a quarterback. So maybe some people hear that and they say, oh, well, then Cleveland's going to trade back and then they'll take a quarterback later on in the first round, or maybe they'll trade back up into late of the first round and they'll get one of these other quarterbacks that are available, right? But I hear that and I say, well, at number two, it doesn't matter who's going at one. Even if Cam Ward goes one, then if Schefter's saying, and just because Schefter said it doesn't mean it's going to happen, but that's a pretty big opinion, that he said the number one thing he's most confident in is that Cleveland's going to take a quarterback. So if Cleveland's definitely going to take a quarterback, is there a chance that Tennessee passes on a quarterback at one? I guess. But I don't think Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter are going to be the first overall pick in the draft. I think it's going to be Cam Ward. So if Cleveland's not moving up to one, which Cleveland could trade up to one and get Cam Ward, but if they don't, and let's say the Giants trade up to one or Tennessee just says, ah, bleep it, we'll take a quarterback ourselves in Cam Ward, then I take that and I hear that the Cleveland Browns are going to take Shador Sanders in at number two. So that's what I thought after this combine. But then I've read a bunch of mock drafts today, whether it's Lance Zierlein, whether it's Ryan Wilson, and none of them, right? The guys that do mock drafts all the time, none of them have Cam Ward going one and Shador Sanders going two. However, with that being said, and some of them don't even have like the Ryan Wilson mock draft, right? He has Cam Ward going one, but he doesn't have Shador Sanders going until six. I feel pretty damn good thinking about this, that in all likelihood, we're going to see Cam Ward and Shador Sanders and Shador at the absolute latest go three. I really think that because I'm in the line of thinking that Cam Ward is going one. So if Cam Ward goes one, regardless of who he goes to, is Cleveland and the Giants, you know, are they going to find a way to pass up on Shedeur Sanders? Like, I don't think so. You know, I guess you could make the case if Cam Ward goes one, Cleveland goes against Schefter, they pass in a quarterback, and then let's say the Giants trade, they're going to make their intentions good to go sign Aaron Rodgers. You know, just because you bring in Aaron Rodgers doesn't mean you need to pass up on a quarterback. So I guess at the absolute latest, like, Zach, if you're wrong, then you do have the buffer spot of the Raiders, knowing Brady loves Shedeur, that I don't think the Raiders would pass up on Shedeur Sanders at six. But what I tend to learn here, even in the years where quarterbacks aren't viewed that deep, and Kenny Pickett was the outlier, the quarterbacks still go early. Like, Anthony Richardson should have never been the fourth overall pick, and he ended up being the fourth overall pick. You had three quarterbacks go in the first four picks last year. Even last year, when we knew quarterbacks were going to fly off the board, none of us had six going in the first 12 picks, right? Like, you knew that Caleb and Jaden and Drake were going to fly off the board, but you didn't know Michael Penix was going to go eight. You didn't know J.J. McCarthy was going to go 10, and then Bo Nix. No one had him going 12. So I still believe, even this, though this isn't a deep quarterback draft class, we'll still see the first three picks and maybe even the first two picks of the draft having two quarterbacks go off the board. And right now, all I feel comfortable in saying is that Cam Ward will be going number one, whether it's the Tennessee, Cleveland, or the Giants, depending if there's a trade. But Cam Ward will be the first pick. And then Shedeur will either then go two or three. I have a tough time if the Giants don't trade up to one and Shedeur is still on the board at three, seeing the Giants go pass on Shedeur Sanders. That's just the way that I feel about it. All righty, here is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. First 17 minutes in the book. We'll take a break. When we come on back, let's react to T. Higgins getting tagged. We will discuss Deebo Samuel getting traded to the Washington Commanders. Also, is DK Metcalf going to be on the move? And I'll issue a little warning here. I'm going to issue a warning to Davante Adams. And I said this the last time he got dealt, and I'll say it again. And maybe this time, I'm not expecting him to respond. But maybe this time, he'll actually listen. So we'll get into the receivers when we come on back. If you want to jump on where you think Cam Ward or Sanders are going to be going, 855-212-4227. It is the Zach Gelb Show. Alrighty, let's start with the latest news, and this was a little over 40 minutes ago, let's say. Adam Schefter, the Cincinnati Bengals, have placed the $26.2 million franchise tag on wide receiver T. Higgins. This marks the second straight year that the Bengals have used their franchise tag on Higgins. So, here's my question. Are you going to get a long-term deal done? Because you, and we won't find out the answer to that, potentially, until July 15th, because that's the deadline. July 15th is the last day a tagged player can reach a long-term extension with the team that tagged them before, if you're going to play for this upcoming season, that you're going to play on the tag or you're going to play on that new deal. So my question becomes, what happens? And this is a question for T. Higgins, and we won't find out the answer yet because why would T. Higgins answer it right now? But what happens if you don't reach a long-term agreement from now until July 15th? Will you play this year on the franchise tag again, knowing that you're going to get $26.2 million, or will you threaten to sit out and demand to get traded somewhere else where one of these teams that trades for T. Higgins knows that if you're going to, then you got to figure out what the contract is that he's going to want before you trade future resources for him? So that's just something to contemplate. And I kind of hope that Cincinnati, you know, selfishly as a Patriot fan, right, I hope that Abdul Carter falls in the draft with this stress reaction that he has. I also hope that T. Higgins tells the Cincinnati Bengals to go pound sand that he doesn't want to get a deal done, and both those players wind up in New England. That would be the perfect offseason for your boy if the Patriots at four could get Abdul Carter and then they could find a way to orchestrate a trade and then go pay T. Higgins. But I got to do a job here. And when I do a job here, I'm starting to think that Abdul Carter isn't going to be available at four. You know, there's a chance if you get two quarterbacks going in the top three and then Travis Hunter's the first non-quarterback taken, instead of Abdul Carter. But I think Abdul Carter's the best player, period, in this draft. The odds may have gone up from him being available at four with this injury. But since there's not going to be a surgery required yet, that I would probably think that Abdul Carter's going in the first three picks. So you look at T. Higgins, the air kind of went out of that balloon where it's not totally out, but you feel like, right, most of the toothpaste is out of the tube right now with the idea of T. Higgins winding up to the Patriots, but there's that hope of, okay, the Bengals can't get a deal done. T. Higgins tells the Bengals to go pound sand, and the Patriots go, they give him the contract and they trade for him. But I look at T. Higgins, this is why I think it's going to get hairy. And I don't think it's going to be as smooth as they would like it to be. Number one, he just got tagged last year. So this is now a back-to-back offseason issue. Also, number two, the Bengals also need to worry about Trey Hendrickson and also, more importantly, Ja'Marr Chase. So my question to the Bengals, where I think Joe Burrow has made it clear he wants them to be like the Eagles, right, where you take care of A.J. Brown and you take care of Devontae Smith, and that's just the state of the league where it's a pass-heavy league, so you basically need two number one wide receivers, right? Because T. Higgins go elsewhere, and he can get number one wide receiver money. But my question for the Bengals is, who do they intend to get done first? Because if you get Ja'Marr Chase's contract done first, then what does T. Higgins want? Does T. Higgins, right, who's a very good wide receiver, I'm not going to call him great, but he's very good, and he could be a number one on other teams. Does he say to the Bengals, right, as we see with quarterbacks all the time, it doesn't matter if you think I'm just very good, I deserve top-of-the-line money. And if that's the case, there's no way that you could get Ja'Marr Chase's contract squared away first and then have to pay T. Higgins. But if you do get Ja'Marr Chase's contract taken care of first and T. Higgins is being reasonable, it sets what the cap is, but we still don't know what the floor is. Because if, let's say, Ja'Marr Chase wants to blow past Justin Jefferson, I don't know if he does, but Justin Jefferson is getting paid $35 million a year. So if Ja'Marr Chase just wants to beat Jettas and he takes $36 million a deal, I don't think that impacts T. Higgins that much. But let's just say Ja'Marr Chase blows past Justin Jefferson, gets $40 million a year. Doesn't the price then also go up for T. Higgins? Because the ceiling is just higher on what the top-of-the-line wide receivers make. Now, I'm not thinking that T. Higgins is going to get $40 million a year, but you look at T. Higgins right now. Let's say if Ja'Marr Chase wasn't on the Bengals, or if Ja'Marr Chase, right, wasn't up for a new contract. You're looking at the top-of-the-line receiver right now making $35 million a year in Justin Jefferson. After that, CeeDee Lamb makes $34 million a year. A.J. Brown makes 32. Amon-Ra St. Brown makes 30. Tyreek Hill makes 30. Brandon Ayuk makes 30. Jaylen Waddle makes 28. Davante Adams makes 28. And DJ Moore makes 27.5. Well, I can tell you this. I'd be very surprised if the Bengals get a deal done with T. Higgins and it's below or does not even exceed what DJ Moore got. Right? DJ Moore makes $27.5 million a year. Now, you could argue that you like DJ Moore better than T. Higgins, but I don't think you're getting that much of a discount. Like, if he's playing on the tag again this year, and the tag again this year is $26.2 million, I don't think T. Higgins is signing a deal that only pays him $27.5 million a year. I don't. Now, I think he could beat out Davante Adams. I think he could beat out Jaylen Waddle. And isn't the Brandon Ayuk situation kind of similar where you had, I know they just traded Deebo Samuel, but at the time they had two really talented wide receivers. And I thought Brandon Ayuk was the better natural wide receiver. Just Deebo Samuel did more. And I even said last year they were going to get the deal done with Ayuk and they were going to trade Deebo Samuel a year from now. That was my prediction last year. So I look for T. Higgins if he wants to be reasonable and it would still make him a top one, two, three, four, and basically, it'd make him a top five wide receiver because Ayuk Hill and Amon-Ra St. Brown are all pretty much making $30 million a year. I think you kind of start with him getting $30 million a year. That's where I think you got to start. Because, you know, could he ask to beat A.J. Brown at $32 million or CeeDee Lamb at $34 million? He's not better than those guys, but he could ask for it, and maybe he gets it. But the thing to watch and why almost Cincinnati has to get T. Higgins done first is because that's the market right now, right? And the market right now, you look at it, and I think any, you know, natural person would just kind of say normal person, all right, how about 4 years of $120? 4 years, I don't know what the guarantees would be, but 4 years, $120 million, you know, pretty much a Brandon Ayuk deal. You know, if you want to, you know, maybe we'll give you $123 million if you want to get yourself up there a little bit more on the list incrementally. Like, maybe, okay, fine. But I think anywhere in that ballpark, four for $120 million for T. Higgins is fair. However, if Ja'Marr Chase then knocks this out of the park and gets a deal first, and let's say he makes $40 million a year, I think T. Higgins may be able to ask for a little bit more money because you just paid, right, Ja'Marr Chase $40 million a year. I know Ja'Marr Chase is better, but I'm still a very talented wide receiver. You know, then is $30 million and Ja'Marr Chase is making $10 million more a year? Is that something that T. Higgins is going to take? So that's why if I'm the Bengals, even though Ja'Marr Chase is more important, I would hammer out the deal with T. Higgins first and then worrying about how much money that you're going to end up paying Ja'Marr Chase later. That's what I would do. But we'll see if they're going to be able to get a long-term deal done. And the Bengals, they have a chance to really change the perception about their franchise. Because for years, right, they were viewed as a cheap organization. They used to make their players pay for the Gatorade and the water in the facility. You know, if you needed a new jockstrap, you used to have to return your old one. I know we're going back like 15, 20 years. But that cheap perception and the fact that they haven't got either Ja'Marr Chase or T. Higgins taken care of yet is still existent. But will you have enough money to then shape out the rest of your roster and build the rest of your roster? Because you also need to take care of Trey Hendrickson, who, by the way, just led the league in sacks this past year. So I do think Ja'Marr Chase's contract will get taken care of. And then it's, I do believe another deal will get done. But can you get all three done in Trey Hendrickson, in Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins? And the salary cap did go up this year. So maybe you have a little bit more wiggle room where you could afford those three monster contracts, plus you already paid Joe Burrow, and then you could still shape out and build out the rest of your roster as you still have a Super Bowl window that is open. So that's on the T. Higgins front. Now, what we saw happen over the weekend, Deebo Samuel getting traded for a fifth-round pick, I thought was a very good move by the Washington Commanders. It's low risk, it's high reward. And you get a complimentary piece for Terry McLaurin at the wide receiver position that could even open up more of the field for him. And also, you could use Deebo Samuel in so many more different ways. There's a lot of wear and tear in that body with how much he's run the football throughout the years. But I like only giving up a fifth. You have 1 year left in that Deebo Samuel deal, and it's very low risk, high reward for a Commanders team that sends a message, hey, we're not just getting complacent and just satisfied with what we did this past year. We're trying to get closer and closer to that Lombardi where we came out of nowhere this past year. We got to an NFC Championship game, but the job's not done yet. And, you know, I'm not comparing it directly to Stephon Diggs with the Texans, and I know that didn't end up working out because Stephon Diggs got hurt, but it was a similar message that was sent last year by the Houston Texans, who had a monster season, came out of nowhere, awesome, excitement with the young quarterback, and then in the offseason, they did improve their team. So I like the start by Adam Peters and the Commanders. I also look at the DK Metcalf stuff. I don't know if he's going to get dealt. Now, I don't know if they are inclined to give him an extension yet, but you keep on hearing things like Tyler Lockett may not be on that team. So if Tyler Lockett's not going to be on that team, I know Jackson Smith and Jigba may be the best wide receiver on that team, but you're going to get rid of both DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett this offseason. But there are a bunch of reports out there, and some of them, right, people say, I hear that he's likely to stay. But I've seen the Bills floated out there for DK Metcalf. I've seen the Chiefs floated out there for DK Metcalf. And I've also seen the Green Bay Packers floated out there for DK Metcalf. Out of those three teams, you know, the Bills have Josh Allen, who's already great. The Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, who's already great. The Packers have Jordan Love, who's good. And, right, Patrick Mahomes doesn't need a number one wide receiver. Josh Allen showed this past year, you don't need a number one wide receiver. Now, with both those teams, both those quarterbacks want DK Metcalf, of course. But I think it's more of a priority for the Packers to land him. Especially because Green Bay went wide receiver by committee, and it didn't really work for them this past year on the offensive side of the ball. And then finally, as we go through T. Higgins, we go through Deebo Samuel, and then we go through DK Metcalf, Davante Adams. Now, I said this about Davante Adams when it was rumored that he was going to get traded before the deadline and he ended up going to the Jets and, he wants to go play with Aaron Rodgers once again and all that stuff. Davante Adams, he's got to learn his lesson. You got to separate friendship and business. That's what Davante Adams needs to do. All right, so you left Green Bay because you were annoyed that you were getting ignored pretty much by the Packers because they were trying to rectify their situation with Aaron Rodgers. You ended up leaving money on the table, and you took less to go reunite with your college buddy in Derek Carr. Then shortly after that, Josh McDaniels said, I want no part of Derek Carr. Then you're with the Raiders. Okay, you want out. I get it. But you end up reuniting with Aaron Rodgers when you knew that the Jets were already a bleep show, and that was a last resort move for them to try to have a last-ditch effort at saving their season. And I remember saying at the deadline last year, before the deadline last year, hey, Davante Adams, like, go to the Commanders, right? Go link up with the emerging young star in Jaden Daniels. Go back to Green Bay and connect with Jordan Love, or I even threw out the Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. But now we hear this report that the Jets are going to try to trade Davante Adams. I don't think they're going to be successful, right? There's the hot take of the day. You know, I know big bad take coming back from vacation, but Davante Adams still prefers to team back up with Aaron Rodgers wherever Rodgers lands this offseason? Why? You're wasting the last few years of your career trying to recreate that magic that you had with Aaron Rodgers. So what, Rodgers plays one more year, and then you have to then go find your next quarterback again a year from now? So it's very simple, and you should have done this at the deadline last year. You know, this past season, you should have said, no, I don't want to go back with Aaron Rodgers. I want to go elsewhere. But go find your new quarterback this year that you can go play the rest of your career with. And I know right now Jaden Daniels is off the table because they have Debo and they have Terry McLaurin. Lamar could use him, right? Imagine Davante Adams and Zay Flowers with Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely. You know, that would be fun. Or even go back to Green Bay. There are options out there. You know, even Davante Adams in Buffalo would be good. Davante Adams in Kansas City. I can name a ton of options that are better than wherever Aaron Rodgers lands and you just going back and looking off the teat of Aaron Rodgers. It makes no sense to me. But, you know, it seems like Davante Adams, at least from the reporting, is addicted to Aaron Rodgers. All righty, we'll take a timeout. When we come on back, we'll address the comments by LeBron James. Lindsey Rhodes is going to join us coming up 22 minutes from now at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Michael Chandler, an interview that I did with him when I was on vacation. We'll play that for you at 4:40 p.m. Eastern time, so in about an hour from now. Update time first. Here he is, the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. All right, it's time to ask the pros. You, the listener, gets to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at INF Sportsnet or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later in the show. We might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low, 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 low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Let's hear from LeBron James. This is LeBron James from last week responding to Anthony Edwards saying he has no interest in being the next face of the NBA.
I mean, it's unfortunate, but like, I don't know, when you have... Why do you want to be the face of a league when all the people that, you know, that cover our game and talk about our game on a day-to-day basis on everybody? I mean, have that responsibility. It's just weird. It's weird energy from the people that I don't know. But Ant said he don't want it. Obviously I didn't ask for it, but I knew there was a responsibility for me, not only to my family, my friends, my community, and whoever that was going to follow my journey throughout my career. I've always taken that seriously and understood from the beginning what being a professional was all about and being a role model was all about. So try to hold that with the utmost respect and honor. But I feel Ant. I understand. I completely understand. This is weird energy when it comes to that. So,
can I just ask a question? Who constantly says negative things about LeBron James? Right? That's in the national media. Like, Skip Bayless is one guy that I can think of. He doesn't even have a show anymore. Right? I know he has his podcast, but he was known, right, with being in Fox and launching FS1 and all that stuff. And he doesn't, and I don't think LeBron really cares what Skip's saying. Like, I took that and I kind of thought it was the inside the NBA guys that he was referring to. But are they ever really negative about LeBron? Like, Shaq, I don't think so. Kenny, I don't think so. Ernie, definitely not. So, is Charles, like, very negative about LeBron? I don't know. But this idea that LeBron constantly just gets, like, crapped on, what? I think LeBron is sensitive to two things, maybe. Maybe it's the inside the NBA stuff, but also the GOAT conversation that does always occur. Because he's not going to be viewed as the best basketball player of all time. You know, let me play my small violin for you, LeBron. You'll be the second greatest ever. But outside of the decision, and also LeBron James' terrible NBA Finals performance up against the Dallas Mavericks, it's usually mainly positive about LeBron. Now, I don't like that LeBron is buddy-buddy with everybody. I think rivalries are pretty good for the league, and LeBron, like, doesn't really have a rival. But I think we all look at LeBron, and we respect his career. So this idea that everyone's just, like, talking negatively about LeBron is ridiculous. The only time people really talk in a negative fashion about the NBA, and shame on us for doing this, is when players don't play, right? It's that simple. Or the regular season product isn't what it should be. Or you have former players that like their eras better than the NBA of this era. But that's the thing that's been going on for years. So I don't think it's weird energy. I just think LeBron is one of those people where he doesn't have to usually deal with a ton of like criticism that's fair. So anytime there's any negativity towards him, oh my goodness gracious, it's like the end of the world for him. He only wants positive things being said about him. So here is our very own David Shepard, the Good Shepherd, which you could hear Friday nights into Saturday morning, Saturday nights into Sunday morning from 2 to 6 a.m. Eastern time. I guess Shep, I'm sorry. I guess Shep thought he was going to get LeBron James on his show, so he sent out an email to the Lakers PR staff, and he was annoyed when his email was basically ignored. This is Shep from over the weekend.
My interaction with LeBron James is non-existent. I reached out to the PR people with the Lakers, and I made it very clear to them that I understand LeBron James is not like the coverage that the media gives the NBA, and more specifically, the face of the NBA, whoever he believes that is. And I want to make sure that I do my part in honoring and understanding what LeBron is after, and I would love to have him on our program. Is there any time in the next 2 months that he can join us for 3 minutes and we can keep it as positive as he wants and we can honor what it is that he's asking for? And what do you think the response I got was? No, I didn't get that. I got nothing.
So
I got
nothing. You did get crickets.
Nothing. So LeBron James is putting out there to everybody that the media doesn't know how to cover the game, is negative, is critical, is cynical. And yet, the people that are in charge of that particular organization, in terms of the relationship with the media, they then don't get back to people that want to do good stories on the Lakers. That's a shame. Can't have it both ways, LeBron. Can't use your soapbox to call out falsely an entire industry. And when that industry then wants to empathize with what you're saying, it's met with a Heisman's arm stiff. Not cool.
I think you meant stiff arm there, but that's fine. So I kind of get Shep's point, but didn't LeBron basically do his interview with Scott Van Pelt, right? Like, no offense, right? I'd say this about me. I'm not, like, if I reach out to the Lakers, I'm not expecting them to say, oh yeah, Zach, we'll give you LeBron James. So like, Shep shouldn't be expecting the Lakers are going to get back to him. So like, I don't even remember the last time LeBron did a radio interview, if I'm being honest. So like, maybe when he was in Miami, if we're being fair. So this idea that Shep reaches out to the Lakers, right? And he wants 3 minutes with LeBron, and like, what, you just want LeBron? We know what LeBron's message is. He only wants to say positive things. That's it. So I got a chuckle out of that. Now, Cap reached out to us, and I guess Cap used a little AI to do a little LeBron James Shep kind of song. I haven't heard this yet. This is the first time I'm hearing it. Stu, take it away.
Oh, Shep had a dream. Oh, shit, took a chance. He thought LeBron would do a graveyard dance. A late night call, just one sad guy talking ball. But the Lakers just laughed. They rejected it all. Did you think he's got this life for you? Leave his mansion for a chat at two. He's got endorsements, a legacy, fame. You've got a studio nobody knows by name. LeBron's not calling, not now, not ever. Your email request was the dumbest endeavor. From Mackie and Pearl up to Rich Eisen's crew, they're all cracking jokes at the expense of you.
Backup nearly fell out of his chair. Reader just murdered. This can't be fair. Even Bokash and Velotti took a break just to roast you before their next steak. He's got trophies, tequila, a billion in checks. You gotta call a name, Stan, who still loves the Mets. Chef, what part of this made you believe that LeBron would call in at 3:30?
That's amazing. Good job by Cap, right? If I was Christopher Mad Dog Russo. Good job by Cap, nicely produced on getting an artist to come in and record that overnight. You're telling me that's AI? Artificial what? Intelligent? I'm not intelligent. So there you go.
We're screwed.
That's a good job. That's great. So, yeah. I thought it was going to go like, call me maybe or something. Like, oh, LeBron ain't calling Chef.
There are others. Kaplan sent me 5 of them.
Oh, my God.
And there's more. So maybe throughout the show or throughout the week, we can sprinkle in a few more.
Like, and this is not me just poo-pooing Shep. Like, I'd say this about myself. Like, if Stephen A's making the request or Scott Van Pelt or Dan Patrick, all right, maybe we'll get red. But is Shep actually mad that the Lakers didn't get back to him about LeBron? Come on. You know, maybe we get Dalton Connect on the network. Maybe we connect with him. I don't think we're getting the King LeBron James. So 3 minutes of what? Shep, I just want everyone to be positive. And I want all this weird energy. He already said that stuff. It's a good job out of Cap. Good job. Lindsey Rhodes will join us next. Michael Chandler coming up in 50 minutes. And maybe LeBron will stop by if he's listening on this Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show.